What's up, everybody? You are listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we took a little holiday break there. It's been a little while since we've gotten to talk to you guys, and we're very excited to be back.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we've really seen each other.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks, obviously.
We had a little adventure to Cinema Obscura.
Mm-hmm. We had the TV party on the 20th.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
That was so much fun. And we had an excursion to the Golden Nugget.
Yes, and
that was very strange.
It was, yeah, it was a weird experience, as it is,
as
you know.
It usually is. Gotta love the news.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted to get in this episode here before the end of the year, and do a quick recap. Now, usually we focus on Chicago cinema and people making movies here in the city of Chicago, but we are also movie enthusiasts, and we want to talk about our favorite movies of the year. And I'm going to slap a disclaimer on it. We are only doing movies that we've actually seen. You know, that's important.
Yeah, because how can you say that it's your favorite? I mean, we could just go ahead and say, you know, Three Billboards Outside of, what was it?
Ebbing, Missouri. And I saw that.
I haven't seen
it. You haven't seen it yet. So it would be kind of weird to, if it were on my list, it makes sense. If it on your list, I mean, then we'd just be taking, we'd just be taking kind of critical consensus.
Yeah.
Be like, oh yeah, no, this is a good movie. I haven't actually seen it, but it's good.
Yeah, just sweep through Rotten Tomatoes real quick.
And naturally.
Let them make my opinion for me.
Speaking of which, before we get started, I do want to touch on with you, Connor, this kind of weird idea of critical consensus versus audience consensus. Now, we've gotten to see the new Star Wars movie.
Yeah, The Last Jedi.
Yeah, The Last Jedi. And as many people have by this point. And I thought it was really great.
Yeah.
I thought it was flawed. I don't think there are really any perfect movies out there.
Right. Well, and since we're doing like kind of a ranking thing today, do you have maybe a definitive place of where it fits into the Star Wars film ethos or whatever?
I would honestly put it up there with probably Empire Strikes, probably number three. So Empire Strikes Back. Then New Hope, and then The Last Jedi in terms of ranking above The Force Awakens.
But for a franchise that's almost existed for 40 years,
yeah,
to have the third best in the series to come out this year,
mm-hmm.
or at least from our opinion, because I feel the same way. I think it was top three.
I stand by. I think it was very much a very, very good movie that, like I said, is flawed, but ultimately it breathed new life into the franchise. And I enjoyed The Force Awakens a lot.
Me too.
But, you know, it was a movie that was kind of a reset. It was a palate cleanser and said, hey, we're bringing Star Wars back to its roots, but with these new characters. Yes, I've heard it a million times. It is beat for beat the plot of A New Hope. No one cares.
Right.
Who cares?
That's what you wanted anyway.
Yeah.
Whether you say it or not.
Yeah. I want another movie just like A New Hope.
Or more
okay.
like, I want, I think nobody knows what they want with a Star Wars movie. Like,
they just, well, and this is a totally different discussion, but I think a lot of it has to do with expectation versus reality. And the narratives that people who are fans of this franchise created in their heads in speculation and excitement, which people do. But it's also time to be a goddamn adult and understand that you are not writing Star Wars. I understand some of the people who are upset that they kind of toss the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to the expanded universe, that extra stuff that that was written and kind of became part of this canon, non-canon sort of deal. I understand, because there was some interesting stuff that was done there. But at the end of the day, Disney was it was a catch-22. Either Disney kept the canon, and then you complained about the fact that it didn't adhere close enough to that, you know, that expanded universe, and there was just like all these inconsistencies and all this kind of shit, or they got rid of it wholesale. And then you're upset because they're just like, wait, they're not doing XYZ. So that's just That's my feelings up on it. I think people have identified themselves way too closely to Star Wars as, like, people.
Yeah, but also I do think, like, a common theme that I notice when I talk to people who said that they didn't like The Last Jedi, I'm not really hearing a lot of concrete criticism. It's more just, like, they point out plot points of the film that they didn't like, but then they don't... It's like, it can't... They can't offer, like, a constructive alternative, you know what I mean?
Right.
I hear a lot of criticism, but you can't just, like, tear something down and leave it in ruins. You have to have, like, you know, an opinion to be constructive about it. Otherwise, it's just destructive and random.
Yeah, and even to that point, it's okay to pick out certain plot things, like, you know, there's, you know, a side sequence on, like, a casino world called Canto Bight, and... You know, some people felt that that was kind of a diversion, a very obvious B plot.
Sure.
Like, there's the A plot with Rey and
the ship,
and Kylo Ren and whatnot. And then there's the B plot with Finn and new character Rose. People comparing Rose to, they're just like, oh, she's the worst Star Wars character, worse than Jar Jar Binks and all this stuff. I'm like,
okay,
you must be fucking kidding.
Yeah,
like,
that's just so off base.
Whatever. The point is that I think a lot of people, as I said, have identified themselves personally too close to the story.
Sure.
That they can't look at something and just... And say, yes, there are some things that are bad, but I would say there are more things that are good. Now, there are people that did not like The Last Jedi that were just like, yeah, it just wasn't for me. And it doesn't have to do with signing a petition of, you know, getting it removed from the canon and having Disney make a new Star Wars Episode 8 closer to what the fans want.
And that's a reasonable thing to say.
Yeah, it's just to be like, yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah.
It wasn't for me. I thought the bad outweighed the good. There are things that just bothered me. That's fine. I will take that any day over hashtag not my Star Wars or not my Luke Skywalker.
Well, exactly. And that's, I think, what you wanted to touch on, right, Tom? Is because there is an insane backlash to this movie.
Yeah, it is. It is shocking. And we'll go to the Rotten Tomatoes score to kind of explain where it's at.
Yeah.
So it is certified Star Wars The Last Jedi, certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, 91% positive reviews, which is fantastic. Not a lot of movies really can get up into that 90% certified echelon. I think it's well deserved. However, there's on RottenTomatoes.com, there's not just the tomato meter, there is the audience score. So the tomato meter is an amalgamation of all these critics that they
send
down.
It out to, they request reviews, right?
Well, yeah, they get the reviews and then they try to give them, because there's so many different ways that people review movies. Some people give it on a scale of 1 to 10, on a percentage, A, B, C, D, E, F. Like,
but it's a binary thing, right?
Yeah, they have to whittle it down into positive and negative.
Right.
So, they got 91% positive reviews. Overwhelmingly positive. Overwhelmingly positive. To give you the exact numbers, 345 reviews counted. Fresh, which means that they were positive, would recommend, 314 to rotten, which means that the critic did not recommend the movie or did not like the movie, 31. So overwhelmingly in the positive category. What there is, though, is that audience score where users can go and give the score of their own. And the audience score is only 51%.
And that's where the kind of insanity might be a little bit of a strong word, but that's where the ridiculousness of the backlash for this movie comes into play.
Right. What I think something that needs to be talked about is, one, there have been reports that there's an alt-right group that claimed responsibility for, like, intentionally tanking the score because they don't like the fact that there's, I don't know, women and black people in Star Wars. Shrug, I guess, you know, but we're, screw those guys.
Yeah.
That's stupid. Like, you know, that I want to remove from it. I want to remove them. We can't remove them from it because it's just a contingent of people. They've been upset since The Force Awakens.
Right.
They've been pissed about it since The Force Awakens.
And another bit of speculation is that people were so upset about it that they went online and there's nothing that stops just regular users on Rotten Tomatoes from creating multiple accounts.
Precisely.
So people went on and they were so impassioned in the negative about this movie that they created, they took time out of their day to give it as many negative like thumbs down as they could.
Precisely. And that's the problem with opt-in surveys. When you do a survey where it's just like you take a survey of you, you don't opt in. Like it's just
like you, they just approach you.
Yeah, they just get random people. You're going to get a more accurate idea of what the general public is actually thinking. Whereas with this, they leave it up to you. You could rate it, you could not rate it. So I would say most people either that if they liked it, they rated it positively. But I think a lot of them might not have rated it at all. I don't have a rating for it on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't have an account.
Me either.
Many people, I'm guessing, don't have an account. But this was a sense of they knew that they could go. People knew that they could go on Rotten Tomatoes, create an account, and tank the score on purpose because they were upset. So that's why I'm taking it with a grain of salt. However, the backlash is there, and it creates an interesting divide between the critical consensus versus the audience consensus. Another good example from a little bit earlier this season was Justice League, 41% on the tomato meter, so rotten. And we definitely agree with that. They sampled 296 reviews, 120 were fresh, and 176 were rotten. So definitely not like Star Wars in the sense that Star Wars was like overwhelmingly positive, like in 300 so reviews positive, 31 negative. This one almost came close to being right in the middle.
Yeah, I think that's a good choice though to bring it in on the other side of it.
Right, but the audience score here 78%,
wow,
significantly higher. Now that might be a symptom of the thing that we were talking about where people felt that Justice League was being attacked and like, oh, the critics, they're wrong. They just don't get it. So they went and created accounts to boost the score. But, you know, when it comes to talking about movies, do you feel that there's an antagonistic relationship sometimes between the audience and the critic?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think that it's necessarily very well thought out. Like when I, obviously this is going to be a little bit speculative here, but when I saw that on the Justice League, the 78% audience score compared to the tomato meter, I kind of viewed it. I feel like that you can't discount that a lot of the people that went on and said that they liked that movie are maybe motivated not necessarily by how much they liked Justice League, but also like anti-Marvel kind of sentiments and
sure,
anti-Disney. You know, I think that there's a lot that goes into something like that that is more than it, that is like wider than just enjoying Justice League, which I find legitimately difficult.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You found it difficult to
enjoy it? Yes, I did.
Well, I think in general, I don't know, and anything that we say is really just going to be anecdotal.
Right.
There's really nothing. We don't have any evidence outside of things like Rotten Tomatoes of how the general public actually felt. But
there are the reports, obviously, that people made the fake accounts and went on for the Star Wars movie. And
right. But, like, I just don't know. You can't account for taste.
Right.
You know,
everybody's a critic.
Would you say that you would tend to agree more with critics more often than you would disagree with them?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think that when I read critic reviews, I usually only do it with movies that I already know that I want to see. I don't like going into a movie, like if I'm searching through Netflix, I really try to stay away from Rotten Tomatoes because I know that even though I go into it thinking it won't color my perspective about it, if I see Rotten Tomatoes score, I can't like bring myself to potentially waste my time.
And
know?
Even with a movie that I might have enjoyed otherwise, because say I saw the Rotten Tomatoes score before I saw The Last Jedi. and it was 91%. And the entire time I'm watching it, even if it's good, even if I'm enjoying myself, I'm going to constantly be asking in my own head, it's good, but is it 91% good?
Yeah, or like you'll like you'll repeat the like words from the review in your head or something.
Right.
Like, I see exactly what they're talking about here.
Yeah, no, they're totally right with these criticisms. So.
It's kind of maddening.
Yeah. I guess what it comes down to is that despite audience score and despite critical scores, maybe it just takes, and I don't want to shut down the role of a critic, because I think critics are super important and can help recommend things to you and can, you know, provide an interesting dialogue about things. But if you are really serious about seeing a movie, if you're really like, I want to see this movie and I want to be fresh and clean and just experience it, you just have to avoid it altogether, because it's going to color your experience either way.
That's why I try to avoid trailers and all of that, but I do think that
I need to avoid trailers more.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I love trailers.
I do, but it's like candy or something. I just gotta stay away from it every once in a while.
It's not good for you.
What was I gonna say? I think that reviews need to be viewed more as a supplemental thing, because like whenever you're creating your own opinion about something, you can't go to somebody else's opinion first, because that's already made up.
Yeah.
And that's gonna seep into you in one way or another.
Yeah.
It needs to be viewed as a supplemental thing, and I think that's what it's supposed to be, but it is easy to get drawn into, you know, whether something's good or whether something is bad.
Agreed. Well, with that in mind, we're gonna jump into our list. So another disclaimer, these are simply our opinions.
Yeah.
Think of us as critics in this sense. We are simply sharing our opinions about how we felt about a certain movie, or a certain set of movies in this case. This is not the end all be all of, you know, the best movies of 2017. There's a million lists out there. We've missed out on a lot of great movies this year that we probably might not get to watch until next year. But this is what happens. We do our best. We try to watch as many movies as we can, and we go from there. So, Connor, I'll let you start us off.
All right.
This is going to be in no particular order,
yep.
Although I do have a favorite.
Yeah.
But, you know, why don't you just give us one of your picks?
All right. I'm going to start it out with a superhero movie, because I kind of want to get that just out of the way.
Sure.
I only have one of those on my list. And I'm going to go with Logan.
Ah, you made it on my list as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Shit. Hugh Jackman's final appearance, supposedly, as Wolverine, which he's had for, what, 17 years?
Something to that effect. Yeah,
yeah.
It's something ridiculous.
And it was a great film, like kind of a great swan song for him. Mm-hmm. It was the first maybe the second R-rated superhero movie behind Deadpool.
Well, I mean, like, do we want to count Blade? And Blade 2.
Okay, yeah.
And Blade Trinity.
Yes. the coveted holy trilogy of Blade. But yeah, I just thought it was a great superhero movie. I thought that like its Western elements and sort of its is like a neo-Western. I thought that it was a great way to approach a superhero movie, and it kind of gets me looking to the future. You know, a superhero movie doesn't have to just be bright colors and capes, or in Zack Snyder's case, you know, like sucking the color out of everything and still capes.
Yeah.
It gives me hope for the superhero genre, like the creativity that's inherent in there, you know?
Yeah, and I would agree with that. Those are many of the things I enjoyed as well. There is just something really deep. I don't know. I really got something from watching Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine in this way and really leaning into this idea that, you know, Wolverine's been alive for a long time and, you know, he's old and battered, and they're going to be playing to the audience's memories and feelings about Wolverine up to that point. They can't not do it. It's the only way the story would have succeeded. So from being someone who watched the first X-Men when it came out in like 2000, I was just like, it felt so, there was so much gravity to it.
Yeah.
Everything that I watched. And it's extremely competently directed by James Mangold, who had been trying to give, well, they've been trying to give Wolverine his own thing for a while.
Yeah.
And they got two shots at it. The X-Men Origins Wolverine was like, at best average.
Yeah.
Then they, James Mangold actually did The Wolverine, where he's in Japan.
Yep.
But this is the movie he always wanted to make with Wolverine, and I think they really did it. If you can, try to watch Logan Noir, which is...
It's the black and white version?
Yeah, black and white version of this movie.
Did that come out?
Yeah, only on home media.
Okay.
They did do some screenings of it. I know the Music Box, I think, had it for a night. But yeah, Logan Noir really changes the whole thing. But fantastic superhero film shows that superheroes can be applied to many different genres.
Yeah.
In this case, you know, an adult neo-Western. I know coming up they've got The New Mutants, which is like a horror movie.
Really?
But, yeah.
It's a movie?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen anything about that.
Oh, it's really just at the beginning of its you know, media push. But they've got a trailer out, but it's the X-Men, but if it were a horror movie.
Wow. Okay.
Kind of interesting.
I'm in.
Logan, fantastic choice. I'm going to go with my first pick here is The Big Sick with Kumail Nanjiani.
Have not seen it.
Oh, man. It's a fantastic romantic comedy. It felt very fresh when I saw it. It's so funny and so real, and it's set here in Chicago, and it tells a true story. It tells the true story of Kumail Nanjiani when he met his now wife for the first time. She ended up going into a coma. They were dating, and she, you know, they had broken a Now, I don't know how much the actual story mirrors the movie itself, but I'm guessing fairly closely because Kumail Nanjiani was involved. I mean, this is about him, but I guess they were dating. They broke it off because of the cultural norms from Kumail's family about arranged marriages, and then she went into a coma. And he helps kind of take care of her. He finally meets her parents. And it's just a great story about, like, you know, grieving and struggle. Because she lives, but there's grief there, struggle, trying to gel these different parts of your personality and your life. It's a great romantic comedy. And it breathed a lot of fresh air into that genre that I feel like had been missing for a while. It was really, really fantastic. So, since you haven't seen it, definitely try to get out and rent it.
Yeah, I will. That's on Hulu, right?
Oh, it's actually on Amazon. It was produced by Amazon.
Right, right.
So, one of those movies. What you got next?
All right. Well, following the vein of romantic comedy, I guess I'll go ahead and throw in Edgar Wright's new original film, Baby Driver.
Really?
Yeah, I'll throw that in there.
I wanted to put it on the list.
Yeah, me too. And I don't feel great about it because I know that there are some problems with it.
Sure.
But I will say this. I've seen it 3 times since it came out, and I've liked it more and more each time I watch it, which is kind of how I feel most of the time with his movies. Mm-hmm. So the first time I watched it, there were things that stuck out to me, and they weren't things that I really liked. Like the kind of unbelievability of Baby and Deborah's relationship. And then I think that we talked about this before, how the female characters were really sidelined.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe just poorly written as well.
Sure.
But the more that I watch it, the more that I feel like I get where he was coming from. He just kind of wanted it to be like a wholesome love story.
Very 50s.
Yeah, very, very like a traditional kind of a thing with a contemporary setting, which doesn't really work.
Yeah, it was weird. It was definitely very James Dean, very Rebel Without a Cause.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
You know, the girl is there to be won in a sense,
mm-hmm.
which I think that was ultimately what kept it off my list. And I think it would just be lower on the list. If we had a top 20, I'd probably have Baby Driver on there.
Right.
But I do really enjoy Baby Driver. I went as far as I own Baby Driver, and I watch it still, and I agree with you very much, where it's just like I started letting myself just kind of get caught up in it, and in that sense it's really fun and really great, and those driving sequences are just top notch.
Yeah.
They're
and
just
I think
so cool.
I think that he did a great job, Edgar Wright. I think that he did a great job playing with the conventions of like an action movie or even like a heist movie. You know, you don't really know who the villain is. You don't really know, I mean, you know that Baby is the main character, but you don't really know like who the good people are, you know, and they all all of the people that are established as who you think they are, the stereotypes or archetypes that you think they're fitting into, it changes by the end.
Yeah.
And I think that that was a creative, you know.
Yeah. And even with Baby himself, he is a criminal.
Yeah.
And although he's kind of a victim, he's a victim of personal tragedy that leads him to become a criminal. You know, it's kind of noir in that sense where nobody's pure.
Yeah.
Everybody's got blood on their hands except for Deborah.
Right.
Because poor sweet Deborah. Yeah. Getting caught up with this these driving baby. This baby who can fucking drive, man.
Yeah. I don't know how they got that baby behind the wheel. But
I don't know. But I think that's a solid pick. Solid pick. John Wick Chapter 2.
Oh, okay.
Which you and I saw together.
That's
We saw that one together. And I really believe that this John Wick franchise will be talked about in like action movie like lore,
theory.
I guess. Yeah. For a long time. And especially with Chapter 2. There were some people that that felt a little bit, you know, underwhelmed by Chapter 2, because where do you go from John Wick 1? John Wick 1 was such a fucking balls out movie.
Without just like knocking people out, you know?
Yeah. With I don't know where they could have, how they could have made it any bigger and better. But in my opinion, they did. And they expanded the world of what's going on, and it's truly a little bizarre. Like, there's this assassins guild and
yeah.
shit. They're all hitmen, and like they go and have brandies after work, and it's very strange. But I liked the angle. I loved all the action sequences. Are so much fun.
Yeah,
and I don't know. I just thought it was a bigger and bolder and more colorful. That's for sure.
Yeah,
there's some more colorful elements of it.
It does look great.
So rewatchable.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen it. How many times have you seen it?
I've seen it quite a few. I own it. So.
Oh really?
Yeah. Most of these movies I own.
Yeah.
Well, so I watch them frequently.
You do buy movies. I actually bought Baby Driver not too long ago, mm-hmm. but I feel like what John Wick Chapter 2 did was what any good genre film does with a sequel, is it takes the original, like, I'm kind of thinking about, like, the transition from Alien to Aliens here. It starts with, like, a heavy genre film with a singular concept, right? There's just the one alien, and you're in this claustrophobic shit. Then you go to Aliens, you kind of blow the world out a little bit more, you expand on the world building, and you introduce more villains which in the Aliens case is just more aliens,
yeah.
and more characters. But with John Wick 2, I feel like it does kind of exactly that. You just go from John Wick going after this one person to, in 2 he's going after 3 people, and now instead of like the one assassin that's going after him, there's like 600 or
yeah.
whatever it is.
And he's trying to get out of the whole system, but you know, there's this weird undercurrent of just like, nah man, this is who you are.
Yeah.
He keeps getting pulled in, and he's just like, no, I'm done, I'm not going to do this anymore. But he keeps coming back, and he's so good at his job. And it kind of ends on this crazy point, which just sets up the third one, which they are definitely going to do, sets up the third one for just who knows.
Yeah,
it could be the greatest action movie ever made. Knows,
or it could be a total disaster.
Yeah. But at least I feel like they're taking some interesting risks with the action genre.
This was on my honorable mentions list for if you took something on my top 10, which
yeah
haven't done so far. But thank God. John Wick Chapter 2 had one of my favorite scenes of the year. The fight scene between him and the mute bodyguard
in the mirror room. Yeah, that was so insane.
It was spectacular.
And great performances all around from Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
The dude's a bona fide action star. I don't know why we thought we should put him in like Bram Stoker's Dracula and all this kind of weird stuff.
Yeah, don't make him do an accent.
No.
Just
please.
Give him a gun,
yeah,
and like a pencil or something. I don't know.
Give me a gun. No, he's a bona fide action hero, and I love it. I am very pro action Keanu.
Me too.
What's next for you? What's on that list?
Let's see. I'll go. I like just following in your thematic, whatever footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna go with another sequel, but it's actually the third part in a trilogy that I really liked. The final installment in the Planet of the Apes trilogy, War for Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
I'm going to put that in there.
I think that's a good choice. It's not on my list. It's probably just hanging outside because I did really love it. But there were just other movies that I felt were above that. But still, I would say honorable mention. And definitely a very honorable mention.
Something that I'm noticing, which you maybe aren't doing, but I think with my list that I'm noticing, is I put a lot of these things on here, a lot of these movies on here for very personal reasons.
Yeah, I would say so.
I'm a huge fan of Andy Serkis and sort of the technology that he pioneered, you know, the motion capture. Mm-hmm. He was sort of like the face of that, I feel like. Early 2000s. Yeah, and still is. You know, with Gollum, obviously, that's Andy Serkis. And then King Kong, he was King Kong. And
was he now?
Was he now?
I thought he was. I thought he was motion capturing Jack Black.
He was actually.
He was a Jack Black CGI model.
See, the crazy thing about that movie, most of the people are Andy Serkis, including Peter Jackson.
Peter Jackson, directed by Peter Jackson. You just see behind the camera, it's Andy Serkis in all the motion capture suit.
Andy Serkis. It's a well known fact that Andy Serkis assistant directed King Kong as Peter Jackson in the suit the whole time. It's well established. But
I think War for the Planet of the Apes has got to be one of the darkest movies released this year.
Yeah.
It was depressing.
Name a third part in a trilogy, a movie that ends the story on like barely a positive note. Like mostly it's just fucking despair.
Yeah.
From a human perspective. I mean, not to, I guess that kind of gives it away a little bit,
you know,
but it's a devastating ending.
Well, let's say, I mean, we all know, well, maybe not we all know, but, you know, this is a reboot series, but we know that it has to wind up being a Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
We know where it ends, we just don't know how.
Right.
So, it's, I wish I could just put these, all three of these movies together on a list of, like, the best, you know, just best franchise
reboots.
Yeah, best reboot, I guess, or best franchise, honestly, best like blockbuster movies of this decade.
Yeah,
because Rise is really good, saved from the perfectly, you know,
normal
formed jaws of James Franco.
Yeah.
Because why did they cast, that's my only big criticism of this whole series, of this whole trilogy, is that James Franco is like the big protagonist.
What was the first one called? Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. So it goes Rise, then Dawn, then War. And it's if you ask me, those three movies are a masterclass in character-driven storytelling. And, you know, they're not over-relying on plot. They're just kind of letting the characters go up against each other and see what happens.
It resets with each movie that you have to, like, they have to reestablish what's happening, you know?
Yeah, those three are movies that if you watch them back to back, it is satisfying.
Yeah.
It is extremely satisfying. And I think War did not get a huge box office take. It didn't get an amazing reception from audiences.
Yeah.
And I think that's because a lot of people missed out on Rise. Not a lot of people saw Rise. And then Dawn came out, and Dawn was directed by Matt Reeves. First one, Rise, was directed by Rupert Wyatt. And Dawn was so much more... It was so much better. Like, Rise was good, but Dawn is so much better. And it was like what people kind of wanted to see. So Dawn was a surprise hit. And then War comes, but it came quite a bit later, 3 years.
But also, it was a dismal summer, and which is when it came out.
That is true. It did not come out in a good frame of time, but the 3 years, I think people kind of forgot who Caesar was, and then they watch this movie and it's like, this is like the ape holocaust. What is happening?
Yeah.
Like, who are these characters again? They kind of forgot. So it's a shame that Dawn and War couldn't be released a little bit closer together, because in that sense, when you see like Caesar as a character grow and you see Andy Serkis play that character throughout all three, it is truly an accomplishment. It is a shockingly nuanced and beautiful portrayal of a character who is an ape.
Yeah.
is an animal.
It's unbelievable. Like, if you wanted to explain that to somebody that didn't know what you were talking about or didn't know the advancements of motion capture, it would sound terrible, I think.
Yeah. Is he a monkey suit?
Yeah, so what? He's just like some guy in a suit? Like, I see that at all the shitty college parties that I went
to. But it's just... And there's so much depth to it, so I think that was a deserving pick.
Yeah.
Definitely a deserving pick.
Thank you, Tom. Tom, what do you
I'm
got?
I'm giving you my validation.
Yeah, okay, I don't need your Yeah, listen, Tom, I don't need you. I need you. All right. What's your next?
So I'm going to go to Ingrid Goes West.
Oh, dude, nice.
That was a fun-ass movie.
It is, and it's really sad.
It is pretty fucked up. It's almost like a horror movie.
Yeah.
But I'll keep it brief because I don't want to beleaguer the point, but I would say it's a movie about the ways that we perceive ourselves and the way that we perceive other people. And not to sound like, you know, a Luddite or anything, but social media.
A what?
An April Ludgate?
Nice.
Not to sound like someone. I don't want to hate on social media here, but we have to be honest with ourselves. It has a very demonstrable effect on our psyche. It changes the way that we see people and we think that people operate, and this movie totally explores that, how exploitative that it can be, and
how exploitative it can make people in
right
turn.
Exactly. So if you want to watch a wild horror movie for the Instagram generation, maybe horror isn't the best word.
It dresses itself up very convincingly as a comedy.
It really does. You think it's going to be funny and then you just stop laughing.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Like this, it's very intense.
Maybe thriller? Drama definitely could work as well.
Well, it defies classification if you ask me. It's really just a movie about a thing and some characters. It has nothing to, there's no genre that can really describe it that well.
Yeah.
What do you have next?
So I guess I watched maybe one of the most unsettling movies I've ever seen in my life in theaters a couple of months ago with my family. Killing of a Sacred Deer. Yorgos Lanthimos' new movie. He made The Lobster, if you're familiar with that. Dogtooth as well.
Yep.
If you're familiar with either of those. The Killing of a Sacred Deer left me... I watched it on a Saturday evening, early evening, and it left me feeling more like anxiety than I think I've maybe ever felt from a movie.
Because
it just keeps building. Like...
Once it gets going, it just doesn't stop.
Yeah. It establishes its internal logic in, like, 5 seconds. There's some, like, magic realism happening in the movie. And once it establishes what, like, is really happening, because before that, you have no idea what's going on, and you're just, like, this baseless, you know, pot of emotion, man. And then they establish the internal logic, and then it doesn't make you feel any better. Whereas in The Lobster, it does make you feel a little bit better. It's like, okay, he needs to find a partner. Otherwise, he's going to turn into a lobster. But with Killing of a Sacred Deer, you're just like, you just keep watching it, and then it just sort of ends. And I think the best thing that I heard in the theater was, once it ended, everybody in the theater was completely silent, and one person said, turned to the person they were with and said, "This is why I don't go to movies anymore."
Yeah. Yorgos Lanthimos saving cinema.
Yeah, one horrendous experience at a time.
Yeah.
But it was a great movie, very well crafted.
Yeah, I gotta check it out. I have not watched it. I'll probably have to catch it. There's a few of them that I've really been meaning to watch. Was Killing of a Sacred Deer, was that A24?
Yep.
Jesus Christ,
yeah,
man.
They're unbelievable.
Yeah, they're distributing some serious shit. That I've been meaning to watch that one, and Good Time with Robert Pattinson.
Haven't seen it. I heard good things, though.
Yeah,
we talked about
things.
It a couple episodes ago.
Yeah,
I think.
been wanting to see that. I'm gonna do two of them here together because they fall into this crazy revival of horror that I think 2017 has had. And I'd say the last few years, this revival of interest in horror. It Comes at Night and Raw.
Oh, nice.
If I had to pick one over the other, I'd probably still go with Raw. But It Comes at Night and Raw are two just incredibly... I mean, they're in that same vein of Killing of the Sacred Deer with it's just like it's just going to take you for a full experience into the depravity of humanity.
It holds you hostage.
Yeah. With It Comes at Night, it's all about like levels of trust and what are you willing to do to survive, right or wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what how far will people go to protect themselves
right.
in the face of adversity? And Raw is just an amazing movie about sexuality and coming of age mixed in with cannibalism.
Yeah.
Like, it's so... I don't think I've ever been so disgustingly, like, aroused.
No. Enthralled, maybe?
Yeah, no. Aroused.
Or were you just straight up aroused?
No. Aroused in the more... innocent sense.
Sure.
No, it is a sexy movie that also disgusts you, and I really like the way that it plays with that, because we're talking about a girl that learns to love the taste of human flesh as she's discovering her own sexuality, and it gets all intertwined and messed up that it's a Freudian dream.
Right.
Like, it's like you could analyze the fuck out of that movie for a long time, and it's just, and overwhelmingly it's just good. It's just a good horror movie.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Beautifully shot, fantastically acted, all in French.
Yep.
It's really good and really gross in a strangely sophisticated way.
See, that's what I really like about, not that it's gross in a sophisticated way, just like the ways that they achieve what they do, but it's not a way that you would normally expect, right? If you think right. of a gory movie, Raw is certainly a gory movie, but the way that they approach gore is it's almost like the movie is asking itself a question, or like the filmmakers were asking themselves, like, what can we do to achieve this end result, but in a way that people haven't seen a million times before?
Yeah.
And I think that could be said of It Comes at Night as well.
It comes, it follows,
Get Out.
It dies. It Comes, It Follows, Get Out.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, both of those movies, super great. I have It Comes at Night, and I watch it occasionally still, because there's very few movies that the title is in of itself a question.
Mm-hmm.
What comes at night?
Yeah.
And the answer, I think there's a lot of different answers to that question. It kind of depends on what you get from the movie.
There are a couple more obvious ones, but yeah.
I mean, one is the, you know, the killer beetles.
Yeah.
That, you know, oh, by the way, that's a huge plot point.
Yeah.
There's killer beetles.
Or the random jars of peanut butter that just somehow keep rolling into the house.
Only at night.
Nobody knows why.
It's a metaphor.
It's, yeah. You guys wouldn't understand. Well, maybe you would.
All right. Connor,
all right,
what's next?
I'll go with another horror movie. We talk about it all the fucking time, and everyone saw it coming, but I actually just watched it last night. It.
No.
Yes. No, yes.
Is it really It?
It's really It. And by It, I mean Get Out.
Oh.
I was using the direct object there, Tom.
You had me there for a second. I legitimately thought you were going to say It.
Well, I do kind of want to combine that, because It and Get Out are both on my list as well.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So if you want to...
Okay.
Let's start with It,
okay. Because... I think you and I really disagreed on it more than we might have initially thought.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, I put a lot of movies on this list due to extremely personal reasons. And this one, I guess it's not a super personal thing, but it saved the box office in September, early September when it came out. Or like late August when it came out. The attendance for films was attendance at movie theaters was like tanking for like two or three straight months. There had most of the movies that had come out, even though they were good, and we've talked about a few, like War for the Planet of the Apes, they suffered, right? Mm-hmm. And then It comes out, and it becomes like this, it becomes this sort of cultural force that gets people who otherwise didn't really go see movies during the summer. It got them into the theater, and it got them watching it. And I went and saw it in theater, and I had a great experience in the theater. There were a group of small kids that their grandfather took them to see the movie, and they started screaming and crying during the first, like during the opening scene when Georgie gets dragged into the sewer. And it was just a cool thing. And like, I was, you know, I was going wide-eyed throughout the whole movie as well, and hearing people sort of screaming in a movie theater. It wasn't an experience that I had had in a long time. And so I have very fond memories of going to see it. So I wanted to put it on there. And I think that there are enough reasons to justify its place on the list.
You know what? That is a fantastic argument for that. You've shifted the paradigm there, because you're absolutely right. It saved the end of that summer.
Yeah.
It was like a mini phenomenon. As someone who works in a movie theater, there was basically just like 3 months of no one going to the movies, which was like bad. Like, that was not good. And then It comes along, and we were selling out shows left and right. Whether it was the marketing or the nostalgia or whatever, they struck the exact right nerve. And
it was like all odds. R-rated clown horror movie.
Yeah.
Like,
and people just flat out friggin' loved it.
Yeah.
They were just like, it was that kind of movie that people, I guess, they would go see and be like, maybe I should be going to the movies more often.
Yeah.
And while I did not like it very much.
What?
I did not like it very much.
Oh, sorry. I forgot what we were talking about.
I really have a lot of problems with it. I thought it was, while visually very cool, incredibly lazy and one note, and too many people were being like, well, it's because you haven't read the book. Fuck the book. I'm not reading the book. I'm watching the movie. The movie can't just be devoid of like interesting characters. While there were good things about it, like I loved Beverly shined. The actress who played Beverly was amazing. And I got to give it up for Mr. Skarsgård for playing
Bill.
Yeah, Billy Boy. I gotta give it up for Bill Skarsgård for tackling Pennywise in a really campy and like interesting way that, yeah, I guess people still found scary. I don't know, maybe not scary, just kind of like shocking. I don't know, just
he was aided by technology more than Tim Curry was.
True, but I'll give it up to him. But I really love that argument that you made, that it got butts in seats, and it was a smash.
Yeah.
It was a smash for them.
It was a really fun movie to see with people.
Yeah, I'll grant you that. But let's get to Get Out, because you're putting Get Out on there.
Obviously.
That is my number one movie of 2017. I know this is not like ranked or anything, but Get Out is by and large my favorite movie of 2017.
I think that's really hard to argue with too, honestly.
Right. And I think taking some of those arguments from It, Get Out was also a surprise, massive financial success.
It came out in, February?
Yeah. A previously thought to be dead zone that was initially cracked wide open with Deadpool. And as much as I don't really give a shit about Deadpool, like, I do recognize the significance of Deadpool being an R-rated superhero movie that came out in February of 2016 and did gangbusters.
Yeah.
And it kind of changed this narrative about, like, the summer blockbuster. And it's just like, wow, you can release solid movies all year round and you'll make a whole pun of... Wow.
A whole pun of money?
A whole pun of money. A pun of money, as they say.
I don't want to make a scene out. Come on out.
Hey. But Get Out, like, totally did that. People saw, for the first time in a while, a genre movie that told that talked about the black experience. Now, there's something we will, I mean, I'll throw this disclaimer right here. I'm a white guy. You're a white guy. Mm-hmm. Anything we say is coming from
rooted
that
initial, in that experience.
Rooted in that experience. But I watched it and I was just like blown away at how good it was. And I mean, it shouldn't be surprising because Jordan Peele, the director, writer and director, I mean, the dude's been in working in entertainment forever. So he knows a good story. He knows how to write. He knows. I didn't know he knew how to direct. Like, I'm, you know, I was just, I'm glad to know that now. But I knew he was a good writer. And, but Get Out is such an effective thriller. I'm not going to call it a horror movie. Okay. I think thriller is a more accurate way to describe it, though it does have some genuine scares, but it's more about, it's more disturbing than it is, you know, scary.
Sure.
And while Mr. Peele has described it as, he said it's not a, after it was put in the comedy category for the Golden Globes, which I think is very offensive. I think that's extremely offensive.
I think he was right to take offense to that.
Yeah.
As well.
And he said this isn't a comedy, it's a documentary. And I get what he's, and I understand the sentiment of what he's saying there, and I understand his critical point of saying that. But that doesn't, I have fun watching Get Out because it's such a great interplay of writing, directing, and cinematography and acting. And even though I know how it ends every time, I've watched it so many times and it's so much fun to watch. And so it really is pure cinema for me. It's pure enjoyment.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, I don't think I really had any other movies that year that reached that same zenith. I saw a lot of great movies that inspired a lot of different emotions in me, but in terms of watching it again and again, mm-hmm. I will watch Get Out again and again and still enjoy it every time.
And in terms of like bang for your buck as well, a lot of these movies that are on my list, they're pushing 2 hours, they're pushing maybe even almost closer to three. Get Out is an hour 45. It's incredibly rewatchable just because of all the things that you can pick up on a couple times through. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just like you said, it's an extremely effective story all the way through, given also what you know about Jordan Peele from a comedy background.
The dude knows how to write a tight script.
Yeah.
That is an airtight script, mm-hmm. if you ask me. It's, I wish more movies would be made like that. I really do. I really wish there were a lot more movies that would, where studios would take a chance on a mid-budget, not even mid-budget, really. I mean, it was made for like maybe $4-5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is, honestly, by Hollywood standards, low budget.
That's dirt cheap.
That's dirt cheap. They spent like virtually nothing on that movie, and the returns were astronomical. So Get Out is a fantastic choice. I want to throw in, I've got a few more picks. I've got three more that we haven't already mentioned, mm-hmm. but I'll do Colossal, which very briefly is a movie with it's super high concept. It's the one with Anne Hathaway, Jason Sudeikis. Super high concept. There's this monster terrorizing Seoul, South Korea, and a young woman who's kind of down on her luck discovers that there's that monster turns out to be controlled by her. And it seems like very straightforward, like, oh man, what a wacky situation, you're controlling this giant kaiju but it is a shockingly emotional and devastating comedy drama about dependence and addiction and the volatility of masculinity. And you can all watch it. If you have a Hulu subscription, you can watch it right now on Hulu. It is so surprising where it goes and how deep it gets from where it starts. It starts out in a way that seems very normal, but then just takes this left turn into a very deep place, and the last shot of that of Colossal will absolutely change you. It is so perfect. It's directed by Nacho Vigalondo, and I can't believe how good it was. I really had no idea really what it was about, apart from the whole monster thing going into it. So if you want a movie that's really just going to be, you're just going to want to watch it right now. It's very, very good.
Well, I have nothing to say about it. I haven't seen it.
I have literally fucking nothing to say about it.
I wish that there was a way.
I'll lend you my copy.
Yeah, thank you. Please do. You sound very impassioned by it.
Yeah, it's... Doing this is kind of weird because I'm talking about all these movies that I love so much, and I can already hear myself using the same adjectives over and over again because these are all the movies that I loved so much this year and I really had a good time with. I'm going to throw my last two in here real quick. Lady Bird. You don't need me to tell you how good this movie is. It's... directorial debut by Greta Gerwig. Great coming of age story. So solid. Fantastic performance by Saoirse Ronan. And that's how you say it, I guess, is Saoirse.
Saoirse Ronan.
Get out and see it. We're finally getting into the coming of age stories that take place in the early 2000s. So millennials can be nostalgic about it now, too.
Great.
So that's fantastic. And then The Florida Project, a movie that made me literally weep on the sidewalk outside of the Century 12 in Evanston for like a solid 5 to 10 minutes. I could not stop crying watching that final scene. It's kind of like Boyhood in the sense that it's not really about there's no plot per se. There's a little bit of plot towards the end, but it's really just kind of following these characters who are living in a motel just outside of Disney World in Orlando, Florida. And it's like this little girl and all of her friends living in this motel, and you would never think you would care so much about these kids. And child actors are always a difficult thing.
Right.
Sometimes they're great. Sometimes they're absolutely terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Lloyd.
Yeah, we're looking
Star
at
Star Wars,
yeah.
Episode 1.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Somehow better than Hayden Christensen, though.
Yeah, I'll give him that. If you ask me, are you an angel? An angel.
Yeah, like how of a sudden did Christian mythology just like burst into Star Wars? Like where the fuck did that come from?
Now this is pod racing.
Yeah. God damn it.
But
this is the best of 2017.
Not the best movie of all time. But The Florida Project is so good. It was so much to watch. And the thing that pissed me off is that I had to go watch it in a theater with like literally full of 65-year-olds. And I don't want to sound ageist here because that's wrong and it's unfair, but like none of them got it. They were just like, this movie's not about anything. And I'm just like, it's about everything, man. Like
you just don't get it.
You don't get cinema. If you can see it, definitely see The Florida Project. But again, my top movie was Get Out.
And then I guess I'll just drop off my last three real quick here. A Ghost Story.
Shit, I did see that, but I need to watch it again because that was crazy.
It's talk about like an airtight. Well, not, I don't know. Talk about just an extremely effective story accomplished with very little.
Yeah.
Sort of like Get Out. And yeah, it's just a beautiful story. It's not
so
really
cosmic,
scary, yeah, very cosmic, very like obviously ethereal. It's a ghost story. It's a wonderful movie.
Casey Affleck walking underneath a white sheet.
Yeah. And I've never been so happy to see Casey Affleck.
True.
When I'm not seeing him, you know.
Yeah. That and Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah. He's had a great couple of years.
Movie-wise. In terms of being
a human being.
Disgusting man.
Fuck Casey Affleck. I don't want to talk about him anymore. So I'll Shape of Water. Saw that very recently.
Love Guillermo.
Super happy that Guillermo del Toro is back doing. We talked about this earlier. Sort of what I feel like he does two types of movies. He does like a concept driven movie, which could be like Pacific Rim or something based off of, you know, something that he didn't write.
Like Hellboy.
Like Hellboy.
And I love Hellboy.
Me too. Still looking for that third installment, which will never happen. But I, my personal favorite things that he does, that Guillermo del Toro does, are his almost like fairy tale, like these gothic fairy tale original things that he writes. Pan's Labyrinth is one of my favorite movies of all time. I watched Crimson Peak not that long ago.
That's a wild movie.
And it's good. It's like,
it's good.
It's beautiful. If you say what you want about the narrative or whether the movie works ultimately, it is a beautiful, like, gothic movie. And he does things with color in that movie that I did not expect going into it. I was enthralled, and I didn't even like the narrative that much. But
yeah,
Shape of Water is a beautiful love story between two truly unlikely characters. And I just think that he does a great job.
Yeah.
I have no idea what it's like to be deaf or mute, and I certainly have no idea what it's like to be a fish person, despite having spent most of my high school years in the water. But god fucking damn it, did I love that movie. Thank you, Guillermo. And then for my final movie of the year, I'm going to go ahead and say Blade Runner 2049 by my boy Denis Villeneuve.
You know what? I kind of wish I had put that on there.
Like, damn, talk it. About movies that
I'll be
do
real
things.
With you. I'd bump Logan for Blade Runner.
Okay. You can do that if you'd like.
I'd like to take a veto, please.
I'd like to All right, you can use one veto a year.
Oh shit.
So good work, Tom.
Yeah, we're right at the cusp.
Yeah.
But now for the next few days,
yeah.
No vetoes.
No vetoes. Don't think real hard about what you're saying,
yeah,
in the next couple of days.
So, Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, in terms of, like, talk about a movie that plays with its source material in just an extremely visionary way.
When I saw that movie, I mean, granted, there was all the hype, and when I saw the tomato score and all that kind of stuff, and I was very excited. So I went in, I feel like, with my opinion a little bit colored, but it fired on every cylinder for me, except for maybe Jared Leto, but, like, you know, he wasn't really in it all that much. They probably could have cast literally anybody else. And
yeah,
maybe would have been a little bit better of a casting choice, but what a performance from Ryan Gosling.
Yeah,
I was surprised.
I'm not a huge fan of Ryan Gosling for whatever reason, but he was amazing in that movie.
Yeah, and he did a really good job. He played it very, very serious, very straight, and that's the thing. He plays it very serious, very straight, and then there's this one emotional moment where he loses it.
Yeah,
for like just a minute.
Yeah.
And it really felt good.
It, like, ties the, like, movie together.
Damn.
I think.
Yeah.
And it's also got, like, my favorite, like, the hologram. Not to spoil anything, I feel like it's not really spoiling anything. Like, the hologram battle.
Yeah, the hologram.
That was my that was my favorite. Like, I thought that was, like, a spectacular.
It was very interesting and very well done.
Yeah,
I think in a lot of ways. And it's hard. It's so sad that ultimately it was not a box office hit.
Yeah.
Just like its predecessor. Like, maybe it'll be a cult hit later. But I think it was bold for Denis Villeneuve to even go for it, to say, we're gonna do a sequel 30 years later to a movie that was financially unsuccessful,
mm-hmm,
had a fraught production process, and is still possibly the greatest science fiction movie ever made.
And if you ever doubted anything about Denis Villeneuve, I think the one thing that you can't really doubt at this point is his vision.
Yeah, at the very least.
The dude knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, and
he's not making a lot of stumbles.
No, he's not apologizing for it either. Like, you know, it's just crazy. It's a very interesting movie. You know, I'm glad I vetoed Logan, but I also kind of feel bad because Logan was really good. So at the end of the day, you know, these are our picks for the best, for our favorites of the year that we saw. And
it was a great year for movies.
It was such a good year.
Not a great year, but a great year for movies.
I think so. And I'm excited to see where 2018 goes. It's every, you know, I feel like every year recently, all of a sudden I see a bunch of movies and I'm like, no, this is the best year. And then the next year, no, this is the best year. But we'll see. We'll see where it goes. I think 2017 saw the culmination of a lot of things, a lot of great ideas and a lot of great artists. So we'll just have to see where it goes next. Just before we go, let's do the three worst.
All right.
The three worst.
Lightning round. All right. Go, Tom.
Justice League.
Bright with Will Smith.
And what was the third one?
The Mummy.
Oh, The Mummy.
With Tom Cruise.
Oh.
Yeah, we did it.
Yeah, the straight up the just the fucking worst. And I just watched Bright today.
Yeah.
Produced by Netflix for like 90 million dollars.
I can't believe you got through that whole movie.
I can't believe it either. And it sucks because it was kind of a cool concept. But directed by David Ayer, mm-hmm. who did Suicide Squad, not a good movie.
Stuck with the style.
Basically, this is stuck with it.
Like, just a bold move.
Yeah, and written by Max Landis, mm-hmm. who has been accused of sexual assault.
By multiple people.
And is frequently one of the most annoying fucking people on the planet. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, he's...
Is he the guy that's responsible for the trigger warning entertainment thing at the...
I don't really know. Maybe.
Trigger warning.
He also made American Ultra, which was a really, like, kind of lame movie.
Oh, I never saw that. That's Jesse Eisenberg, right?
Yeah. I think he wrote Chronicle, which is why he kind of came to prominence in a sense. Not, you know, the fact that his dad is John Landis notwithstanding.
Right.
You know. But he wrote some movies. He did Victor Frankenstein with
Fass or Aaron Eckhart. Or was it Fassbender?
No. So that was I, Frankenstein. Oh. And then there's Victor Frankenstein with Daniel Radcliffe.
What?
And who the hell plays Professor X?
Oh, Patrick Stewart was in that?
No. The new Professor X.
Oh, James McAvoy.
James McAvoy. It was James McAvoy and Daniel Radcliffe.
Like, what the fuck is Patrick Stewart doing? He was in another...
He was in the Emoji movie.
He was in another one of our picks for worse stuff.
But we decided to keep it out because under no pretense should anybody believe that the Emoji movie is really a movie by any standard.
Right. No matter how much Apple tries to make its emojis move in the iPhone 10.
Well, that's
we
weird.
See you,
it
Apple.
It was made by Sony. The movie. It was Sony Pictures.
Ugh. Really?
Yeah.
Well, fuck.
You think it was produced by Apple?
No, I just
or
know
they just
that
licensed it from a.
I just assumed that, like, I don't know why I said. I just feel like the word emoji to me just is like inextricably tied with Apple.
I
guess.
I believe you. Yeah. All right, so there it is, a recap of the year in movies that we really loved and three that we totally fucking didn't.
And your cap's back on, and now you can go feel free to watch any of the amazing movies that we recommended or some of the terrible ones that we recommended as well or didn't recommend.
Watch all of them or none of them.
Right.
Like, whatever you feel. And we're going to be spending the next probably month or so trying to catch up on the ones that we missed. So thank you so much, guys. I hope you guys have a great 2018. Here's to more new movies and more great people here in the city of Chicago making movies. This is No Co Cinema on WGN Plus. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we will see you in the new year.